I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start and manage and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 211. Hey, Brian.
Yes?
Do you keep your books and file your own taxes?
Well, I keep my books in the library. And
That's not what I meant.
I do keep my own books, but I do not file my own taxes anymore. I do use an accountant.
Yeah, I don't do mine either.
I used to use Quicken or, you know, one of those TurboTax programs for years and years, and then about 10 years ago, I stopped.
Well, that's like me. I send everything off to my trusty old CPA, Janice, back in Vermont, and I suspect most of our sellers probably do the same.
I think so, too.
Yeah, smart eBay sellers do that. But what about the up-and-coming eBay newbie seller? For many of them, they haven't really given their selling on eBay and taxes any serious thought.
And I know with the changes in regulations and law regarding IRS Form 1099-K, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
A lot more sellers will be receiving a 1099-K this coming January.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons that eBay partnered with the company represented by our guest this week. Mark Yeager is the Vice President of Operations at TaxAct, and he's going to be our guest. And TaxAct will be a guest in future episodes as well.
Well, that's excellent.
Yeah.
So what's the topic this week?
Well, Mark's going to explain the different options for any eBay seller when it comes to setting up their business structure.
An important topic indeed.
Yes, it is. And then you and I will answer some questions. But first, it's that time. What's in the news? It's not a slow news week.
It is not a slow news week. We've got lots of news to cover this week, starting with the aftermath of Hurricane Ian, which is being called the worst hurricane to hit the U.S. in decades. As with all weather or natural disaster-related catastrophes, eBay has automatically instituted account protections for all eBay sellers impacted by Ian. The details are included on the associated post on the announcement board, and that's at community.ebay.com/announcements.
Yeah, it's easy to find.
Yep. And hopefully all of our sellers are safe and back to selling as soon as they get everything else back to normal, because boy, pictures were scary.
They are, and there's a lot of sellers who are personal friends of the podcast, and let us know if we can help.
Yep, we've got a lot of Florida sellers. We also have some other news.
Yes.
And this is shipping.
Oh boy.
USPS, FedEx, and UPS have all announced temporary increases to shipping rates and surcharges for the upcoming peak holiday season.
They do this every year.
But it's nice that they're announcing in advance and sellers can plan.
So Benjamin Franklin will have to redo his old saying, nothing is certain in life except death and taxes and the carrier increases around the holidays.
Exactly. However, not all these published rate increases will apply when you purchase labels on eBay.
Hooray!
To help you plan ahead for this peak season, we have summarized the changes specific to eBay labels, and you can read that summary on the eBay announcement board post for the topic.
Yeah, and again, it's easy to find it. Just go to the announcement board. And for those of you who don't want to go click on it because you're transfixed to this podcast episode right now, we'll include a link in the episode 211 transcript so it'll be easier for you.
And I have another way for them not to go.
Wow.
They have to go once.
What?
So if they go once to the announcement board and then they click on the three little dot or the more drop-down menu and hit subscribe, they will get an email whenever we post an announcement.
That's a smart thing.
Yeah. Then they don't have to worry.
And then you don't need us to be reminding you.
The other thing is when they get that email, they'll see the title of it and they'll say, does that apply to me or not? So do I actually need to go in and dig more? So something like shipping would apply to the majority of our sellers.
Yeah, some of these news items may not, I can't imagine why they wouldn't be of any interest.
Let's say you sell collectibles and you have no passion at all around selling sneakers. And we announce something about sneaker authentication.
Which is in here. Yes, it's in here.
You may not want to go in and read. Of course, curious sellers may want to go read anyway because they might say, hey, that's another potential inventory item for me to go sell.
I know. You're at the Goodwill and you see a rare pair of Michael Jordans.
Signed.
Yeah. So you buy them for $10 and now you're going to sell them on eBay for several thousand. Well, suddenly authentication is very important.
It is.
So cool. What's up next in the news?
Well, next in the news is the recently announced, just last week in fact, 2022 Fall Seller Update. And the most talked about component of the update is the announcement of a major upgrade of our global shipping and international delivery programs, which we will merge into a single program called eBay International Shipping Program, which, as the update stated, will have eBay covering all international returns.
Yes, that's big news.
Huge news. Along with shipping, there were announcements about videos and listings, upgrades to the eBay messaging system, and the ability for sellers to customize the look of their store newsletters. You can read through all these and more on the eBay update announcement and the update page on Seller Center at www.ebay.com/Seller Center. Then click the resources tab and scroll down to seller updates.
Yeah, see, I want to get people using Seller Center more.
Yes.
And it's right there, so it's easy to find.
And there's also a link to that Seller Center link in the announcement on the announcement board, too.
And guess where we're going to put a link to that? Guess.
In the podcast transcript.
Well, kind of. Remember, we had to change it because it's now in the summary overview.
It's in the summary overview. Yeah. You're right.
So what else? Is there more?
There is. Next, we have another interesting bit of shipping news. And the sneakers authentication program. Beginning in October, upon sale, eBay will provide sellers of authenticity guarantee eligible sneakers with a FedEx shipping label at no cost.
What? Impossible!
What's the authenticity team thinking?
Well, they're onto something.
They are. This is the label to ship sneakers to one of our authentication centers. You can learn more at the Selling Sneakers page on Seller Center. And we'll, of course, include a link directly to that page in the item.
Oh, overview, summary overview.
No, it's the item transcript, isn't it?
No,
it's the overview. You're right. It's the first one.
You know, I read a review and our thing says, if you want to listen to two addle-pated old white guys talking about eBay, this is the show for you.
And this is a perfect example.
They got it right.
They did.
Anyway, what this means is if you have a pair of sneakers and they sell for more than $100, you're going to get to ship them for free.
Which is fantastic if you're a seller.
Yeah. Hello. I mean, if it's $1,000 or $3,000 or $10,000 pair of sneakers, probably not as big a consideration, you know, given the potential profit margin. But, you know, I sold a pair of sneakers for $165. A bit of an extra $10 in my pocket. I'd be okay with that.
We just send it to them via email, send it, or do they have to go use label printing?
So there's two things. If you read the announcement, you can print the label. They'll send you a label to print, or they'll send you a QR code that you can take to FedEx and just show them the QR code. They'll scan it, print out the label, and put it on your box. You'll also be able, with this program, to call FedEx and have them come pick up the box. For those of you who have printing, I tell you, I looked at this thing from both sides now, from near and far, and still somehow it seems to be a big deal. So I like this.
Well, I'm sure our sellers are going to like it too. And
sorry, Joni.
We have
what?
Finally,
yes.
Our last bit of news.
Okay.
We'd like to offer our congratulations to the 50 sellers selected this year for the 2022 Up and Running Grant.
Yay!
The Up and Running Grant program annually awards 50 notable eBay sellers, each with $10,000 plus customized mentorship, training, and tools. Drawn from nearly 15,000 submissions, this year's winners represent 23 states and multiple categories, ranging from a bridal boutique in California to an auto parts shop in Ohio and a sneaker store in Texas to a trading cards collector in Florida. You can view the complete list of selected sellers on the eBay Inc. blog at www.ebayinc.com/.
And that's the way it is, or was, as of last week. I know you have to cut out for a meeting, Brian, but will you join back up with us after our interview with Mark to answer a few seller questions?
I would love to.
Oh,
I will definitely come back.
So let's talk to Mark and then we'll do some questions.
Sounds good. We'll see you then.
Many times in past episodes, you've heard Brian and I take questions from you. And a lot of times they're about taxes and we really can't answer them. We're not really supposed to because as eBay employees, we are not qualified to be giving you tax advice. But our next guest is Mark Yeager is Vice President of Tax Operation at a company we've talked about in the past. They have a partnership now with eBay, TaxAct. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Griff. Happy to be here.
We're really happy. You can take a load off our shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready to talk taxes with you.
Now, we're here today to talk specifically about our first subject of many that we'll be addressing on future episodes. But this particular episode is called business structure. Can you define what that means?
Yeah, business structure is just really how you want to go about setting up your business. There's many different ways of doing it, and the complexity level changes based off what you choose. So I know we'll talk a little bit more about sole proprietors and partnerships and S corporations and LLCs, and how you go about setting up your business is really going to depend just based off what you're trying to do in your business. So Yes, it'll be a good conversation around how we want to set up the business.
So if we're looking at the different options as a ladder, I'm assuming that you can start off as sole proprietor. What does that mean?
Yeah, sole proprietor. That's the one that it was probably the simplest one that we'll talk about today. Sole proprietor, obviously the word sole is in the name, so that means one owner of the business. So this is likely the easiest one to just get started. If you're new into the business or you're new into kind of forming your business and what you want to do from a seller standpoint, it's probably the easiest one to get set up with because all your profits pass through to your individual return. So there is no needing to register with the IRS. There is no needing to register with the states. There are no franchise tax fees you have to pay and all that stuff. It's really just about, hey, let's just get this business started. And then all you have to do is worry about recording that income, recording those expenses on your normal individual tax return on a federal Schedule C. So the sole proprietor, the simplest one, but there are some drawbacks as it relates to all your profits are going to be taxed right away on your individual tax return. You will owe FICA taxes. So FICA, just to explain a little bit further, is the Social Security and Medicare taxes that, you know, as employees, we typically pay, but even as business owners could potentially have to pay as a sole proprietor.
Let's imagine that we're talking to an eBay seller who has just started out. Maybe they quit their job or they lost their job sometime during the past year. And this year, they've started selling on eBay. When they hear us talk on the podcast, we say, make sure you record all of your sales, your income, and your outgoing. So they've got records. What do they have to look forward to next April 2023 when they sit down to do taxes that would be different from when they were doing taxes in their previous life?
Yeah, definitely, Griff. It's a great question. So first and foremost, you hit the nail on the head with being organized, right?
Yeah. That
filing your individual taxes, just especially if you're an employee for a company or something along those lines, is difficult enough to a point where, you know, it's entering your W-2s and things of that nature. But then as maybe that you're just getting started with your business and now you're keeping track of those expenses like purchasing a computer and obviously the income that rolls in from selling through eBay and things of that nature, it's so important just to make sure you have good records. But now that you have those records, now it's like, okay, well, what do I do with these things? What's the process by which I need to report this information to the IRS and potentially your state if you live in an income taxing state? And that's the different thing about that is a Schedule C. I know I mentioned that just a little bit early, but there's a form called a Schedule C that gets filed with your normal taxes overall. And it's a couple page document. It's a couple page form that basically lists out, hey, here's slots or line items that I can enter for the income I received for the year as this business. The IRS lists out a bunch of different expense types. Now, again, you don't have to necessarily follow their rules. They list out advertising. They list out supplies and things of that nature. They're just trying to help you out as it relates to categories of expenses that you can claim. But they can't list out every category of expense. So they do provide a spot for an other expenses more towards the bottom of their form. That's what you have to look forward to. It's all right, now that you're organized and you have this income and expense document, now you go about the process of entering it on that Schedule C.
Yeah, this is the part that's always frightened me.
Yeah, it can be. It can be. And I think the concern that I know I've always heard over the years was, I just don't want to forget anything. Right?
Or make a mistake,
because there's always the fear of that audit. But, you know, one of the things that I always recommend to people filing their taxes and things of that nature is be consistent. When you're filing each and every year, if you're going to record advertising expenses on, let's just, I can't remember what line number it is on the Schedule C, but let's just say it's on line 15. Let's make sure we're entering those advertising expenses on the same line each and every year. And that's all the IRS really wants is just consistency, because it's just easier to follow to make sure that you're supposed to be doing what you do each year.
All right. So we've gotten this far and this can serve me well. Now I know I've taken care of my selling with the government when it comes to selling on eBay. Do I want to remain a sole proprietor forever, or when do I start looking at a more upscale, if you would, business structure? And if I do, what is my next option? I think the biggest liability for a sole proprietor is that they are now responsible for their business in a way that if, you know, things go under, there's no separation. So it could take, you could lose your house, for example.
That's right. So your personal assets are not separate from the day-to-day items that come up with the business. So if something bad happens with the business, yeah, you're going to have to make up with that, make up those losses, for instance, through your personal assets. I always look at the sole proprietor, right? It's you're just getting started. You're maybe dabbling into a little bit of a profit for the business, but it's just more like this is a great way to get started.
Yeah.
And to your point, Griff, then maybe it becomes more about liability protection. And you may hear the word LLC come up quite a bit. And LLC is like an umbrella. You can do an LLC over multiple business types. And I would say if we're just talking about the next step, like what's the next step after being a sole proprietor? It really comes down to, okay, if you're still running the business on your own, you'll hear this terminology called a single member LLC. So that single member LLC, what's really cool about it is it the fact that just like as a sole proprietor, you entered your information on a federal Schedule C, nothing changes. You actually, as a single member LLC, you still enter the information on a federal Schedule C just like you did before.
Okay, that makes sense.
I caveat that on the state side, some states are a little bit different as it relates to single member LLCs, and maybe there's a few more forms requirements and franchise fees and things of that nature that you need to pay. But at the end of the day, on the federal side with the IRS, the reporting requirement on your tax return maintains the same. But to your point, Griff, the liability protection, right? That's what comes with that LLC. It really separates what you have going from your business versus your personal life and your personal assets.
In effect, what does LLC stand for?
Limited Liability Company.
Yeah, there you go. It's right in the name. It's right in the acronym.
That's right. Yeah, the word liability is probably the biggest one in there.
So I'm thinking about finally moving to LLC because I'm still sole proprietor on eBay. I don't sell that much, but I'd like to start selling more. Do I have to pay a fee or register, or how do I do that?
Yeah, so as a single member LLC, you will have to register, and it's typically with your state. So I know I did this a while back as I was dealing with some opportunities for rental properties and things of that nature. You do work with the Secretary of State typically in each individual state that you're registered in. Now, there are programs out there. There is software out there that may help you go through this process and complete those forms. But I will tell you, if you would like to save some money, usually the fee is very cheap with the Secretary of State. I'm in Iowa, so I know that through experience. I've researched both of them. But yes, yeah, you will have a few more reporting requirements, at least with the state, just to make sure you get registered as an LLC.
I like to get help when I'm doing these sort of things. And does Tax Act offer anything that can help me fill out a form for becoming an LLC?
Not as becoming an LLC. The part where Tax Act does jump in and help with is that federal Schedule C and your individual tax return that I mentioned.
That's a big one.
That's right. As a sole proprietor or as a single member LLC, hey, yeah, you have to go through the process of getting organized and making sure you're keeping track of your income expenses. We do not provide that support, unfortunately, for going out to the Secretary of State and getting registered and things like that. I know it would be great. Maybe there's a future opportunity for us there. But for right now, we want to make sure that we keep that tax filing process as simple as possible.
Okay, now that I'm an LLC, now maybe I want to advance a little farther. What's the next step up? And is there a reason for wanting to? What's it called?
You know, the next step up, and part of it's going to depend on the amount of profits you're making. But I will say, you really are now pulling in new partners and new shareholders at this point, right? Like, Griff, maybe you're heading through your business, but you're like, you know, this isn't a lot of fun doing alone. Or, hey, I'm having fun, but I really am looking for another investor to come in and help with the business overall. So that's where you may change out of either the sole proprietorship or the single member LLC and really look at what's most likely you're jumping into is the partnership. It's more the multi-member LLC. You don't have to be an LLC. It's that limited liability company that the umbrella I was talking about from a liability standpoint that's there. But the partnership is really the next one overall. It's easy to set up. Similar to the LLC, it's really easy to set up. It's great for most owners to understand, you know, you can come up with this profit allocation, right? Maybe you're going in 50-50 with a partner on it. Maybe you get 70, they get 30. So it's pretty easy to allocate that overall. From an employee standpoint, you know, if you have no employees, if it's really just you two, you know, or you three or four members kind of doing it, you know, you don't have to worry about payroll. Payroll always gets people hung up a little bit more because there's more taxes around it and things of that nature.
I know you can get into some serious law violations if you're not doing payroll correctly.
That's right. So obviously that's where the partnership return ultimately comes in. And Now things change, right? And now things change from a reporting standpoint when you go to file your taxes each year. A partnership is basically what you may hear as like a pass-through entity. So now when you go to file your taxes, you're not filing a federal Schedule C with your individual tax return anymore. There's a business return that you're filing. And for a partnership, it's this Form 1065. So you go through, it's completely separate from an individual return. You go through and report your income, your expenses. You enter all the partners on a Schedule K-1 or on a Schedule K for that partnership. And then all your income and expenses pass through based off your profit allocation to individual partners on a Schedule K-1. And then that Schedule K-1 is then used to complete and enter your information on your individual return.
Okay, that makes sense. I can envision myself moving in that direction someday. But can you go over one thing that you said before, and that's the pass-through entity? What exactly does that mean? I'm still a little confused.
That's right. So if you remember, I'm talking about this being two returns. It's a business return that you file,
yes,
that Form 1065, and your individual return. So when you go file that Form 1065 for your business return with your partners, right, you enter all your income and your expenses for the business. And you might think, well, the business pays for those taxes, right? It calculates a tax rate, and then the partnership for my selling business ultimately pays those taxes. That is not true. There is no taxes ultimately. There may be a few, but there really are very limited or no taxes on the partnership return that you pay. All it does is it calculates your share of income and your share of expenses that then flows from the 1065 or passes through from the Form 1065 to your individual return, where you will report that income on your taxes, on your individual tax return.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I seem to remember in the past seeing place on the regular tax form that says income from Form 1065. Am I remembering that correctly?
You are. That's the Schedule E, page 2. So Schedule E is the main Schedule E is for rental properties and royalties. And then page 2 is really for the pass-throughs. So if you get income from a 1065 or an 1120S, and there are some other ones too around estates and trust. But yeah, it all will flow through to that Schedule E, page 2.
This is not as scary as I thought it was going to be when we started this segment. So that's good to hear. We've talked a little bit about the pros. What are some of the cons with an LLC?
There's a cost to it, and obviously you have to go through the proper procedures with the state to do that overall. So remember, the sole proprietorship, you're kind of a little more freewheeling, wild, wild west. You just kind of get to do what you want. But then from an LLC standpoint, yeah, now just have a few more or documents that you need to file. There may be a fee or a license fee that you need to file and pay each year. You may have to file an extra form with your state. You know, I know California. And I think even Texas has some LLC fees that you need to pay. So
of course,
there are states out there that, yeah, you have to pay a little bit more money for. And that's typically the downside, but the protection, right? It just depends how important that protection is for you.
So I've gone through this now, and unbeknownst to me, my business has now taken off. I didn't do the multi-member thing. I like running this alone, but I'm now at a level where I think I might have to start hiring employees. My volume has increased. This is in my head, by the way. And it's a dream. But a dream's come true. I talk to eBay sellers all the time. And I've had to rent a bigger location in order to run my business. How long is this LLC business structure going to work for me? Or do I have to start thinking about moving to a more complex, higher-end business structure?
Yeah, so the LLC, or at least the partnership LLC, will continue to work. Now, the downside is that when the income passes through to your individual return, you have to pay FICA taxes. Remember, I'm back to that FICA tax comment around Social Security and Medicare taxes.
Yeah.
On that, right? So it's not as simple, obviously, for, you know, maybe getting payroll and things of that nature set up. And that's ultimately when you start getting much more profitable, right? You start coming up with tax strategies even more than maybe you have before, right? Because, well, gosh, I'm making good money. I don't want all of it going to Uncle Sam or the state to have all the money for. So you start thinking more on the tax strategy standpoint. And really, that's where you switch over to an S corporation, right? And the S corporation is really, again, it stays consistent with shareholders. There are certain rules that come with being an S corporation. But at the end of the day, you know, you can now start paying yourself a wage with an S corporation. So even though if I'm a shareholder in the S corporation as a partner, I can't do that. In the S corporation, if I wanted to pay myself a wage that just says, hey, you know, I'm going to pay myself $20,000 this year. I'm going to pay myself $30,000 as an employee to continue to do the work of the selling business. You could do so, right? And that you would be like a normal W-2 that you would receive and file with your taxes each year. But the rest of the income isn't taxed for purposes of FICA taxes. So you really get to avoid those Social Security and Medicare taxes as being part of an S corporation.
Oh, you know, I never really thought about that aspect of it. If you're somebody who's just starting off on eBay and you've always had a job where you got a paycheck, your FICA, you really only paid half, right? Because your employer puts in the other half.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct.
So, but that doesn't happen when you're self-employed. You put it all in.
You got to put it all in. So yeah, that's the advantage of, hey, I can now pay myself as a W-2 employee for this business. The business is going to pay half of it still, and I still have to pay my own half. But then any other profits left over as part of an S-Corp, there are no taxes then on the S-Corp income.
And you can reinvest it in the business or reinvest it in another employee?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you can start making some investment decisions in the business about how you best want to utilize those profits.
So now I'm moving up in the world.
That's right.
I'm an S-Corp. I assume that the next step is to be a full corporation.
Yeah, that's when you're getting a bunch of employees, a bunch of owners in the corporation kind of company, right? It's things change kind of completely from that standpoint. Now, there are lots of benefits. We call them C-corporations or just normal corporations where you no longer pass through those taxes, that the income and the expenses no longer pass through. The business will pay the taxes. Now, the tax rate for a corporation, not an S corporation, but C corporation, is low, right? So there's definitely lower taxes involved with it. You don't run into certain requirements that you run into with S corporations. Like S corporations, you can only have 100 members or 100 stockholders. Everybody has to be a U.S. citizen and in the United States to do that type of thing. Whereas a C corporation, those rules kind of get thrown out. You see some better tax rates overall. But that's now when you're really stepping up into maybe a full-grown business of what you see today, like an eBay.
Exactly. And you should never not dream, right?
That's right. That's exactly right, right? That's the American way. It's about pushing forward and kind of advancing with what you want to do from your business.
I've never started a corporation, but I remember in the early days of eBay when I was working here, when they made all of the steps necessary to become a true corporation. In lieu of becoming a publicly traded company, that involves underwriters, and it was an interesting process to watch. And this was during the first dot-com boom. I think back on those days, and even those of us who were involved at eBay at that level never dreamt it would become as big a company as it did. But Pierre had a vision, and you can have a vision too. And who knows, you could take your sole proprietor through the steps and eventually someday be a big corporation yourself. I do know that there are some eBay sellers who sell on eBay who are now true corporations. So it can happen.
That's
anyway.
Great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Well, Mark, tell people where they can go to learn more about Tax Act and some of the arrangements we've made for eBay sellers to benefit from the Tax Act website.
We have a site dedicated for eBay and the sellers to go out to and check. It's www.taxact.com/eBay. We do offer a 25% discount for our eBay sellers. I know that was going on during the eBay summit, but it just has a whole bunch of information out there. I know sometimes, reading a lot of information around taxy knowledge isn't always the greatest thing, but I'm telling you, when it comes to saving money on your taxes and understanding what you want to do from your business standpoint, it's so vital. It's such good information out there to read. So obviously, eBay has done an amazing job. You know, Tax Act, we're trying to do an amazing job as well, just to kind of get that information out to you to help you make the best decision for you and your business.
We'll be having Mark and his team on a regular basis to talk about different aspects of running and growing a business from the numbers and tax operation point of view. Mark, I want to thank you so much for stopping by. I look forward to our future episodes.
Yeah, this was a pleasure being here. Hopefully everybody got some good information out of this and can't wait to come back again in the future.
Mark Yeager is Vice President of Tax Operations at Tax Act. If you have any questions about the topics that we talked about with Mark in this segment, you can send them to podcast@ebay.com, and we'll always work with Mark and his team to get you the right answer.
You got questions?
We've got answers. And our first question this week, Brian, was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Pamela. Why don't you do the honors?
My pleasure.
Okay.
Well, Pamela writes, "Hello, Brian and Griff."
Your name first again.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
"I love your podcast and listen every week."
Of course you do.
"Even though I've been selling since 1999, well, thank you, Pamela.
That's a long time.
Yes. "There's still a lot I have to learn from you. And this week, I need your help figuring out shipping discount."
Uh-oh.
I think I'm going to defer to you on this one. "I recently inherited a beautiful wood board game called Oh Snap. My family played a few times, and it was fun. But the kids are older, and Dungeons & Dragons is more their style nowadays. I was going to sell it, but realized 6 of the playing pieces were missing. This doesn't affect gameplay, but it would be hard to resell without them. When I went to look for replacement pieces, there were none, either from the manufacturer or on eBay. Light bulb moment. I should sell the pieces to other game owners to make their sets complete. I read in an online forum that people were looking for them, and the manufacturer does not sell them. I listed them a few weeks ago and priced each at $1 with volume pricing. Shipping is set at 4 ounces. I sold 4 of the pieces today, and the total came out to $4 minus fees, and surprise to me, free shipping. I'm assuming a free shipping rule I forgot about came into play, but I can't find discount shipping rules anywhere on the listing page. I will take a loss on this sale, but will be happy to know it's completing someone's set. But for the future, can you guide me on how to set shipping rules for individual listings? I can't find anything on the listing page. Also, is there any way to have different shipping fees within a multi-item listing? I suspect not. Thanks so much for your advice, Pamela in Chevy Chase, Maryland."
And she gives an item number, which we won't give, but it's what I use to reference.
And she says, "P.S., this is my second question, but I didn't get a mug for the first. If they're still available, can you kindly send one?" Yes, we can. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. So, Pam, we apologize for not getting you a mug, but we will get you one this time.
In fact, I may have forgotten to send this mug out, but no fear, Pamela. We'll put you on the list for a mug, even though the supply is dwindling, and we're not going to refresh it. We're going to have something new.
We're going to have something besides mugs.
We haven't decided what yet. I thought we were going to ask our listener base to give us their ideas.
We should.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing I forgot to follow up on, so I'll make sure we do it for the next episode. But if you want to send in random something, and let's be reasonable, I'm not going to send you something like, you know,
like an iPad.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Branded with eBay for Business podcast.
Yeah, something that's, you know, under 20 bucks that would make a great gift that we can brand with the eBay for Business podcast. Let us know. Send it to podcast@ebay.com, and we'll see if you come up with better ideas than we do. Otherwise, it's mugs, totes, and blankets.
Yep.
Anyway, Pamela, I took a look at your listing you provided. It doesn't show as free shipping, and I also don't see volume pricing. I'm going to have to assume you made some changes to the listing in the time since you sent your first email. But I do see you're using multivariations, and for these game pieces, that's not a bad idea, except I noticed something else, and you're going to run into an issue with including a game board as one of the variations, since it's a different size and weight.
Good point.
That should be a separate listing. Multivariations are only intended for identical or closely similar items in size and weight. The different game pieces are okay, at least for this one listing as multivariation, but you should really remove the game boards and list them in a separate listing. And I saw she had multiple game boards, so list them in another multi-unit, you know, multi-quantity. When you have multivariations, the items have to be related both in size and weight and type even. So, you know, the board is not a game piece. I wouldn't do that.
That makes sense. And I'm pretty sure it's also not possible to provide more than one option in a single listing for weight and dimensions.
That's right, yes.
So, Pamela, I would look into applying a shipping discount promotion for the listing. If you haven't done this before, you can find the options for creating promotions in Seller Hub under the Marketing tab, and then by selecting Promotions. Then click the Create a Promotion button and select Shipping Discounts. The instructions from there are pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, and I'll actually include a link that goes right to that page in the summary overview for episode 211. 211, yeah. And that's very good advice, Brian. And Pamela, here's the important consideration when selling multiples in a single listing. Don't make it complicated for the buyer. If you set a single shipping price and offer discounts on that price for multiple purchases, the buyer won't have to contact you to work out a discount. By using a shipping discount promotion, for example, the discounts are going to be clearly presented to the buyer, and the buyer can then make a decision right then and there without additional time-consuming input and back and forth with you. You got to avoid that, right?
Agreed.
Yeah. There's also a legacy tool that you may have been referring to in your email, and it's for shipping discounts that you can still access through My eBay Accounts Shipping Preferences or the URL ebay.com/ship/PRF. It'll take you to that same page.
But Pamela, that's the old option for creating shipping discounts for combining items into one package. So you have to keep in mind that any settings created on this page will apply to all your listings.
Yeah, they're global.
The promotions method Griff mentioned might be your better bet because you can create a promotion and apply it to one or more selected listings.
That's right. And another strategy, Pamela, is to work the shipping cost into the price of a single item and offer free shipping. That way, shipping is taken off the table for the buyer. If I determine that I can offer discounts for multiple purchases, I use volume pricing with free shipping. This allows for instant purchases based on the discounts the buyer can see, and they don't have to start calculating, what about shipping and shipping discounts? That's one of the things about free shipping when it works, and that's in cases like small, lightweight, easy-to-pack, multiple-quantity items. Just get rid of shipping.
Right.
Put it into the item price, and if you're using the right strategy for volume pricing and you understand the weights and where your shipping inflection points might be, so, you know, if you're shipping first class package, the weights can in their packaging can be up to 16 ounces. At that point, they have to move to a different class of service, either USPS Priority or UPS Ground. One may be cheaper than the other.
That's actually a really good point. She's on the East Coast in Maryland, and so the cost to get to us in California would be very different than for her to get to Kansas City.
But you still have to get an overview of where those inflection points are going to be. Then you don't have to offer different services in the same listing because you can't. But what you can do is when you offer free shipping, you select the service that works best for you when it comes time to printing out a label.
So all she had to do in that scenario is just raise the price of the items to already incorporate the shipping cost and offer free.
Yeah. And if you're dealing with lightweight items, it's really easy to do that and still stay competitive. And the idea, again, is the first thing the buyer sees is the price and then the discounts. Oh, I don't have to worry about shipping. It's free. And that you'll get more sales. Oh, well, that one went on forever, Pamela. I hope you got something out of that answer.
I hope she did.
I think she might.
And hopefully she'll get a mug.
She's on the list. I wrote her down. She's in there. She's inked into the list.
That's good.
Yes.
Our next question is about a topic near and dear to your heart, Griff.
Really?
eBay seller Phil wrote this to podcast@ebay.com. Brian and/or Griff.
Brian and/or. Is that your last name now?
Andor, just like in Star Wars.
Brian Andor.
The planet Andor.
Well, you got both of us, Phil, so go on.
Brian and/or Griff. I recently noticed I have the ability to print labels from the mobile app, which is amazing. I was curious if there are certain printers that work better than others with the app. Is there a certain printer you would suggest? I currently use a Zebra printer, but it's clunky with my Mac and does not have Bluetooth capability. Before I purchase a new one to use from the eBay app, I want to be sure it will work smoothly. Thanks for your help, Phil. And Phil did not include a shipping address, so no mug for him.
Phil, send us your shipping address so you can get one of these dwindling supply collector items that are soon to rise in value.
I think you should start getting a marker and signing them.
That'll ruin them.
Oh, maybe.
Who wants a signed mug from me? You know, the only thing that would be worse is a mug with my face on it that you have to look at every time you drink coffee in the morning.
Oh, you should do that old caricature one from old eBay radio days.
No, not going to happen. As you might imagine, Phil, we can't, as eBay employees, endorse any one particular thermal printer. But that said, Brian, what's your favorite?
Rollo.
I kind of knew that.
It's the only thermal printer I've ever had in my life, though, so I'm a little biased.
Well, yeah, and my husband Rob has one and swears by it. I haven't upgraded yet, but Phil, the people that use Rollos tell me they're great, you know, really good, efficient printers, and they work wirelessly from the app.
And another one we hear about is Dymo.
Yeah, I don't hear anything about Dymo. That's you. You just happened to buy one. You're just trying to boost it up so you could sell it on eBay. Like Phil, I have an old Zebra printer. Actually, it's a newer one that I like really, but it is wired to my computer.
And they don't do Bluetooth now?
No, they do. They have a more expensive Bluetooth, but it's more expensive, I think, than the Rollo.
Yeah. So the sellers seem to talk about Rollo more than any of them.
And I have never heard a bad thing about them. Sellers just, they fall all over themselves talking about how wonderful their Rollo printers are. So, Phil, I can't recommend it, but it seems like Brian and a lot of eBay sellers are really hot for Rollo.
And there's some other options out there. You could also hop on like the eBay discussion boards. And just pop a question into the seller board and
that's
say,
a good idea.
You know, hey, any recommendations? And I'm sure you will get flooded with opinions.
And Rollo just had an upgrade, I think, in the last 6 months. You know, they introduced a new model. So there may be older, perfectly functioning items, examples of early Rollo printers that will work fine for you. So check them out on eBay as well.
Save cost. Buy a one-year-old item that's lightly used.
Yeah, our next question was emailed to us at podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Scott. He says, hi, Brian and Griff.
Did you pay everyone this week?
No, and that's the order they put the names in. I think it just might be alphabetical because Brian and Griff kind of rolls off the tongue. Griff and Brian, that kind of sounds weird.
Griff and Brian.
Brian and Griff. I think Brian and Griff has a better sound. I don't mind being the caboose in any arrangement. I love the podcast, says Scott. And I look forward to it every week. I have a best offer question. I've been selling for a while now, and I noticed there are two types of customers that submit best offers. Uh-oh. The customers that start out low and like to haggle. And then there are the customers who give you their one and only offer right from the start. The problem is you don't always know which customer you're dealing with, so you can be leaving money on the table if you expect the first offer, or you can be missing out on a sale if you counter their offer. Is there a way to contact a buyer who submitted an offer and that you have countered and they have not accepted the offer yet? The reason I ask is that sometimes when I make a counter offer and I get no response back from the buyer, I would like to contact them and tell them to resubmit their first offer and I'll accept it. This is the most amazing game of best offer chicken I've ever heard,
yes.
Right? Thanks for all your hard work, says Scott. I know making this podcast and answering questions like this is not easy. Oh, contraire. Yes. This is a gravy gig, Scott. There's nothing difficult about this job. LOL, he says. His name is Scott, and his user ID is Scott's Amazing Attic.
I like that name.
Scott's Amazing Attic. I kind of want to see the attic. Send us Polaroids.
Is it like that Geico commercial with all the broken up dolls in it? I'm kidding.
Could be a freaky show, yeah. Well, anyway, what do you think, Brian? I didn't script out an answer to this because I thought we could just extemporaneously address this question. Because for number one, it's not going to happen. We're not going to provide you a contact channel outside of offer. That's the whole point of the best offer feature.
This reminds me of back in the day when people would put in proxy bidding and they'd lose the item.
Mm.
And they'd say, well, if you would have given the opportunity to bid again, and the idea behind the proxy bid was, give us the number you're willing to pay, and we're going to bid for you all the way up to that amount. And until then, we're done. But
you don't second guess.
The other thing to think about with the buyer, there's another constraint there, and it's time. So the buyer has that one decision to make. I'm either going to accept it or not. And if it's too high, they're just going to look for another one of the items on our site or somewhere else.
Right.
So don't get too aggressive in your counters.
Or just play it completely unemotionally. Just make it a rational business decision. I have an offer. A buyer has sent me an offer. I will counter offer this. I never hear from them again. Next buyer. I get an offer. I counter offer. He counter offers. I accept. Next customer. If you spend a lot of time second guessing the motives of your buyers, you're going to make bad business decisions. Like if you tell me that you would have accepted the buyer's offer the first time, then you're not making a smart decision to begin. Don't second guess what the buyer's intentions are. Look at the offer. Don't say, oh, it's lowball, or, oh, this buyer is probably never going to counter offer or accept it. Just approach it without any emotion, just strictly rationalized business decision.
Can you afford to sell it at that price and Do you think if you wait another day or two, you're going to get another buyer who will pay you higher?
Yeah.
Or you take it?
I don't think in Scott's case, it's mostly emotion. I think he's second guessing what's going to work out best for him.
You can kind of look at this too. Like, if how often do you feel that way, that you would have taken the buyer's original offer?
Yeah.
And if you find like 50 or 60% of the time, you're willing to have taken that original offer.
Take the offers.
Then maybe take the offers. But if it's only 10% of the time and you're countering and they're accepting your counters, treat it like a business. You know, you've got data coming in based on what you're offering those buyers. But we all know there are some lowball buyers out there. And so...
Well, God bless them.
Yes.
You don't ask, you don't get.
Right.
So when somebody offers me a dollar for a 50 buck item, I think, well, this is a starting point.
It's so funny that you said that. You don't ask, you don't get. That reminds me of a seller who's been on this show, and that's kind of her negotiating motto, and she learned it from her father. If you don't ask for a really low price, you'll never get it. And the worst that they can do is say no.
Yeah, you may catch somebody on a day where they're looking at this, what they thought was rare and wonderful, fantastic, profit-laden item, and they say, well, I've had this for a year, and I'm so tired of looking at it. And you offer them, you know, 10 cents on the dollar.
They just want to clear it.
And they go, sure, take it. And who's the winner there? You both are. Scott, I hope that answers your question.
I want to go check out Scott's attic, though.
His amazing attic.
His amazing attic.
It's not just an attic. It's an amazing attic.
I think I'm going to check it out.
I wonder why it's amazing. It has stuff in it.
Yeah. Stuff for sale. Could just be a virtual attic.
It could be his eBay store. Is, you know, the most popular antique store name back before the internet, if you were driving around?
Attic.
Granny's Attic. Oh, I found it in Granny's Attic. Granny used to take a lot of valuable stuff and put it up in the attic.
Well, if you've got a question like Scott or Phil or Pamela about selling on eBay, then why not call us on 888-723-4630 and share it with the rest of the world?
That phone number, by the way, in case you missed it because you were too busy doing something else, is 888-723-4630. Call at any time of the day, any day of the week. Leave a question or a comment or a rant or a screed. I don't care. And we just might put it on the air, especially if it's entertaining.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now your 3-point podcast checklist.
Number one, check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Number two, oh look, it's time to finally purchase that thermal printer you've been considering and putting off. Just do it.
Name brand?
Oh, Rollo.
And number three,
yeah.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
And on our next episode, we're going to meet up with our good friend, Chelsea Cooley from the Seller Update team. She and I, and hopefully you, will go over the most popular questions that have been asked or brought up about the different update topics.
And we'd like to again thank our guest this week, Vice President of Operations for TaxAct, Mark Yeager.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.